Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The opioid epidemic emerged during the late 1990s in the U.S. and since then has claimed more than a half million lives. The latest spike in overdose deaths is blamed on the highly potent synthetic opioid fentanyl, which is used in the illegal drug market to boost the effects of everything from cocaine to heroin. After two Ohio State students died recently from suspected drug overdoses, the Office of Student Life issued a warning that fake Adderall pills, apparently containing fentanyl, had been in circulation. A new study suggests that an increasing number of American adolescents are falling prey to this latest spike, not because of increased use, but because of the increase in the use of fentanyl in the manufacturing process of these illicit drugs. Chelsea Shover is an epidemiologist and an assistant professor in residence at the UCLA School of Medicine, where she oversaw the study. Her research focuses on substance abuse, infectious disease, and social and structural risk factors. Chelsea Shover, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And I just want to shout out my colleagues who I do this work, but I would give all the credit for supervising that particular paper to Dr. Schreiger and Joe Friedman. But I'm really happy to be here.
Okay, great. Let's just start with a primer. What is fentanyl? What makes it so dangerous?
Sure. Yeah. So fentanyl is a synthetic opioid. And synthetic here means that it's manufactured from, as you might imagine, synthetic materials. Contrast that with heroin, where you need basically, you need a poppy field to manufacture heroin at scale, whereas for fentanyl, you can make it in a lab. It's more potent per weight than something like heroin or morphine. And it has, emerged throughout the United States it's been used for many, many years as a prescribed pain medicine, particularly for, cancer patients and with anesthesia for surgery and things like that. But more recently, over the last almost 10 years at this point, it's been really manufactured illicitly and been in the illicit drug supply. And like you mentioned, is being added to or replacing lots of other drugs that we're used to having, like heroin, and it's showing up in counterfeit pills, as you mentioned with the Adderall, a lot of counterfeit oxycodone, and counterfeit Xanax and other benzos.
When we talk about counterfeit, let's just say Adderall, is that Adderall, but it's not? I mean, is it Adderall?
Or sometimes.
Is it okay? Or is it just right. has the numbers punched into it when it's manufactured to appear to be Adderall, but it's not?
Exactly right. So they're made with pill presses, which are made to look exactly like the genuine article, and they may have some of that original ingredient, but oftentimes they don't, and that's what makes it really dangerous. Because if someone is expecting to use Adderall and they haven't been using opioids at all, they have absolutely no tolerance for an opioid. And then they get a very strong opioid like fentanyl. And then that's when that becomes a problem and an overdose.
I'm trying to understand the logic of using something as deadly as fentanyl in this way. I mean, this is your customer base. Let's be base about it. Why would they want to be killing off their customers?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that really, puzzled me when I started really looking into this about 4 years ago. Actually, a coworker of mine and two of his friends died because they thought they were using cocaine. It turned out to be fentanyl. And, at the time I was like, cocaine's a stimulant. Why would you want to have fentanyl? And it's hard to know exactly, but it seems to be several different factors. One is just that places where people are manufacturing drugs might not be following super strict decontamination quality control. And so it happens accidentally, for sure.
Okay.
But it's also, as fentanyl has been around, some people want to use it. And so then there's sort of like market demands for it. With Adderall specifically, I know that that's something that happens. It does seem to be, that seems to be one of the more newer things, with something like oxycodone.
Yeah.
Very clear why you do it, because it's cheaper, it's easy to make, and you can, and Oxy's costs a lot on the street. With Adderall, you know, it's probably some combination of those factors, and it could be unintentional or it could be, you know, on purpose. And some people do report that mixing, you know, mixing fentanyl with a stimulant enhances the effect of both. So there could be some of that. Without really, without testing the actual drug, it's also hard to know. Like, you know, were those Adderall pills a mixture, or were they just totally just fentanyl?
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're trying to understand the latest spike in overdose deaths. It's blamed mostly on a highly potent synthetic opioid, fentanyl, which is used in the illegal drug market to boost the effects of everything from cocaine to heroin. My guest right now is Chelsea Shover. She's an epidemiologist and an assistant professor in residence at the UCLA School of Medicine. She, along with a team, does research focused on substance use, infectious disease, and their social and structural risk factors. And the work you recently did with the team reveals a correlation between the increase in national overdoses and an increase in adolescent overdoses. What do you make of that at this point?
For sure. Yeah. So I think there's a couple key things. One is that the fatal overdoses among adolescents have increased a lot, but they were really low to begin with. And they're still, when you look at it in absolute numbers, they're still low relative to older people. You know, we still see the highest overdose death rates among older age groups. The increase among adolescents, though, you know, when we look at the surveys like Monitoring the Future, where we look at reported experience using different drugs among high schoolers, we see that it's not going up. And particularly, it's not going up for the types of drugs that are causing overdose. And what that really tells me is that this is largely due to contaminated or unexpected supply. And I would blame that mostly on counterfeit pills. I would say, you know, there's always in any population, there's going to be a mixture. But what I'm really looking at is I'm seeing that the story, when you see that adolescent deaths are going up, but use isn't, what that tells me is that the kind of, you know, experimentation, trying something maybe only, you know, once or twice, that's becoming more deadly. And that's because that fentanyl is being used in press pills. And so somebody thinks they're taking an oxycodone, which, you know, maybe they could have at one point gotten from a medicine cabinet, but really, you know, it's been illicitly manufactured. It's actually fentanyl, and that's what poses the problem and leads to a fatal overdose.
Is fentanyl, you mentioned that it is more potent per weight. Is it something that with repeated use, if you survive it in the first place, you can become more used to it, that you become more resistant to it?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So with any opioid, you know, with repeated use, you build a tolerance.
Yeah.
And so what we're dealing with now is that there are people who previously might have been using heroin or other less potent opioids, and now they've become accustomed to using fentanyl. And now that's why we see in some parts of the country that, you know, in most of the country at this point, but that fentanyl has really replaced heroin, because for people seeking heroin, it's not, you know, now fentanyl is what's really the kind of strength that people need to get the same kind of effects. But yeah, absolutely. But if you try it and you have no tolerance, then you just get all the risk.
Yeah, I mean, hypothetically, let's say you bought some counterfeit Adderall because you wanted to stay up late study, right? Blah, blah, blah. It's in a story as old as time, and it turns out to be contaminated with fentanyl, and you're dead the next day.
Yep.
Well, how, I don't know if this is something you can address or not, but social and structural risk factors, how does communicating and getting the word out to adolescents differ from the general population?
Yeah. So there's one, you know, there's definitely some advantages for communicating with adolescents. One is that, you know, the study that we did, it looked at 14 to 18. And the great thing about that age group is the vast majority are in school. And that means that if you're doing good school-based drug education, you can reach a lot of adolescents. You know, I think that good education needs to be things like, you know, we have an overdose reversal medication, naloxone, right? Or Narcan. We've got the intranasal spray. There is an injectable form, but the intranasal spray is really easy for anyone to use. That needs to be at the forefront of that high school and even college drug education, where it's like, you know, you might think you're taking an Adderall, but if it turns out to be fentanyl, you need to have someone with you and you need to have that person have naloxone so they can give it to you. I think, you know, that's a really key thing. The other thing is just education about counterfeit pills, right? Like what, you know, when I was in high school, the drug education, you know, I mean, I would say that mine wasn't great, but it, we didn't have to worry about that so much. Whereas now it's like, no, it needs to say, look, if you're buying it on the illicit market, it's, there's a risk that it's fentanyl. And if you haven't been using opioids, that can be a really big problem. And so it's really important that you A, never use alone, and B, that the person who's with you has naloxone and is ready to use it. I think the other really key thing is, you know, having naloxone available in the same way that we have, you know, we have AEDs available to deal with cardiac emergencies. Mm-hmm. We need to have that for naloxone. We need to have it in libraries and schools and dorms. And that's a really key part of it. A part of the education is, I think a lot of people just don't know that this is even a risk. The other thing that's important to sort of point out is that it's not 100% of the time, but you can't know unless you're checking your drugs, which is also a good part of education, right? We have test strips that are on the order of $1 per strip that you can use to test whether the thing you think is Adderall is actually contains fentanyl. And that's a really good use case for it, because probably someone trying to use Adderall, it doesn't want fentanyl. And so if they use the test strip and it says positive for fentanyl, they're going to say, oh, no, thanks, I don't want that. And so that those are kind of the big things. It's like, don't use alone, have naloxone with someone who can use it. And of course, if you have naloxone, you got to call 911. Like, it's not, you know, just giving naloxone, that'll bring the person back, but you got to call 911 to get the supportive care and make sure they stay, you know, they remain well. And then testing, you know, checking what you have and seeing if it has fentanyl in it.
You know, I there's probably people out there listening saying, how about they just don't do drugs anyways? How about the Just Say No program? I think that was during the Reagan administration. What about that tactic with adolescents in these days, if ever?
I mean,
it worked.
You know, I don't know. I mean, I feel like, have you, it's like you talk to an adolescent or a teen and, you know, you tell, like, generally, I think most of us have had the experience of saying, like, please don't do that. And then that's, there's nothing they want to do more. You know, I mean, we see the same thing with when we talk about sex ed, and we've got lots of research on that. I think, you know, it bears it out with drug education too. And so it's kind of, it's approach of saying, look, like, teens are going to try things. Let's make sure they survive that experimentation. And here's the information we have to equip them to do that.
I wanted to ask you, your study found that the highest rates of overdose deaths among American Indian and Alaska Native adolescents mirrored those for adult populations. But the figuring out wasn't very straightforward. What are your theories at this point?
Yeah, so I guess American Indians and Alaska Natives as a census group have had the highest or second highest rates of overdose in the U.S. population for a long time. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I think we can talk about some of the social and structural factors that led to that initially. With adolescents, I would say probably a lot of it is with the same kind of factors that led to it with adults, which is, you know, anytime you have people getting subpar medical care, having less ability, you know, less, being less empowered to participate in the workforce, just being able, just having more disadvantages that affect all of life, you know, start, you know, drug use might be something that is more likely to cause problems, right? You know, if someone who has access to a great job, a stable home, you know, has a period where they're using drugs and that's a little chaotic, they've got more of a safety net. But when we're talking about populations that on average have less of an access to a safety net, the consequences for any one action are just bigger. I think the other thing, you know, I know we talk a lot in Canada, it's definitely the case that First Nations people ended up with pretty high opioid related more opioid use problems, partly because physicians who would come to the area would just like fly in, fly out. They don't have time to really spend time with people. And then that gets, you know, the exposure. Like drug use is something where, you know, you have to be exposed to the drug to have a problem with it, right? So those are some of the factors, I think. I mean, definitely. So it's, you know, you get racism at the level of like social factors, you get racism at the level of medical care. And any, you know, anytime we're talking about a group of people who has fewer opportunities or less ability to access the kind of stabilizing forces, those are going to be issues. As far as American Indian, Alaska Native adolescents, I don't have a clear answer for that. I would just mostly look to, and I wish we had one of our colleagues, Joe Gaughan, who was on the study, who actually focuses in that area, and I would love to hear what he thinks about that. But okay. That's about what I have.
Well, Chelsea Shover, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Chelsea Shover is an epidemiologist and an assistant professor in residence at the UCLA School of Medicine. She and her team do research focusing on substance use, infectious disease, and the social and structural risk factors therein. We're focusing on opioid, synthetic opioid fentanyl today, and also going to be coming up talking about what's known as harm reduction strategies that were very much like what Chelsea was just talking about. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Fentanyl has been a game changer in the ongoing opioid epidemic. The highly potent synthetic opioid has been found in a raft of illegal drugs and associated with the current spike in overdoses, particularly among adolescents. Adolescents have been particularly hard hit, and many are advocating for so-called harm reduction strategies, including needle exchanges and fentanyl test strips, for example. Dennis Cushon is the founder and president of Harm Reduction Ohio. Dennis, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
What is harm reduction? Let's talk about what we mean by that and how it came about.
Harm reduction is an attitude of taking practical steps that have been shown to work to reduce the harm of drug use. Of course, the most important harm being death. So we focus a lot on preventing overdose death.
Why is it controversial?
It used to be because it was just say no, as you mentioned in your last segment. But we're the largest distributor of Narcan, Naloxone in Ohio, and I feel like I'm giving out apple pie. It doesn't. The state's been pretty supportive, and it doesn't seem controversial to me. But I must travel in different circles.
Ohio's received nearly $1 billion from the opioid settlement money. The state held its first meeting of a foundation created to spend the money. They held the first meeting yesterday. Do you know how harm reduction will be embraced among that? I think it's a 25-member panel.
None of the money has been spent yet. It'll probably start being spent early in 2023. There's an 8-page list of things that the money can be spent on, and harm reduction is explicitly mentioned in there. So I'm optimistic that it will be properly funded.
Is anybody from the harm reduction community on that panel?
Unfortunately, no. It's really been the impacted community, people who lived and shared experience, even like mothers who have lost children, have been shut out of the panel. And that's a problem that we're trying to fix right now.
That met for the first time the other day. What was the first meeting like?
They wouldn't let the public in, so we don't really know. They said, will do a TV feed that you can watch, but it was covered by open meetings law, and unfortunately, the public wasn't allowed in.
President Biden is the first president to embrace harm reduction. How significant is his endorsement at this point?
I think it's going to be significant. It's changed the focus of how money will be spent, like allowing fentanyl test strips to be used and other things like that. The policy hasn't started changing yet, but I think within months in Ohio, you're going to see a big difference, more support for syringe programs, also called needle exchanges, which is really the only place that government has contact with people who use drugs other than arresting them. So that's really an important location to do overdose prevention.
How does the Biden administration approach compare to his most recent predecessor and those that went before them?
It's a little more harm reduction friendly, but surprisingly, the Trump administration was pretty harm reduction friendly. It didn't explicitly use the same language, but it's sort of a nuanced. The state opioid response grant, Ohio gets almost $100 million a year from the feds to largely do as it wants to prevent overdoses, has been spent on many harm reduction friendly things, especially naloxone. A problem with fentanyl test strips is that technically it's illegal in Ohio. There's a bill in the legislature that will probably pass to make it legal to give out test strips. And oddly, we give them out, health departments, everyone gives them out, but it's made it impossible for significant funding by the state or the federal government because technically it is considered drug paraphernalia.
Is it illegal just in Ohio but legal in other states, or is it a federal law?
It's a state law. It's legal in about half states and not legal or gray area in other half.
That goes to the whole issue of preventing harm reduction, not trying to cure necessarily the crisis, but to save more people.
Harm reduction accepts that people use drugs, people use alcohol, people have sex, but you want to prevent the horrific outcomes, especially death, from that happening. Most people don't realize that Ohio has below average levels of drug use. We have high levels of overdose death. So our problem isn't high levels of drug use. The variable that we need to work on is preventing overdose death and taking a look at we have perhaps the most fentanyl contaminated drug supply in the country, certainly one of the top three states.
How would harm reduction have made a difference in the recent? Well, we don't really know what they took. The OSU students who died recently of overdoses, we don't know yet. But when it comes to, say, the pretty common usage of illicit Adderall for, you know, to stay up late at night and study kind of a thing, is kind of the most, plausible explanation. But if they don't have a fentanyl test strip, they can't tell if it's been laced with anything else, right?
To me, I'd be skeptical of the claim of fentanyl-laced Adderall. It occurs, everything occurs, but it's extremely rare. And students have access to legal, pure Adderall, no problem. They trade it for free among themselves or sell it for a few bucks. So this looks like it was an end of the semester celebration, 10 o'clock on a Wednesday night. And the 911 call said that there was powder. When the roommate came down, there was powder.
Okay.
It sounds to me not like it could happen, and we don't know. But people talk about fentanyl-laced marijuana and fentanyl-laced Adderall, which is a way to avoid the stigma of cocaine or heroin. But fentanyl-laced marijuana is not really a thing. You hear it all the time, but it's not so.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Dennis Cushon. He is president of Harm Reduction Ohio, and we're talking about how to cut back on the deaths related to opioid overdoses and opioid misuse. If you have a question or comment this hour, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Can you give me a sense? You say that you're giving out the test strips, the naloxone, and all that all the time. Can you give me some numbers to explain the volume that's going out there right now?
Harm Reduction Ohio, my organization, is the largest in the state. We gave out 32,500 Narcan kits, most supplied by the Ohio Department of Health last year, and we reversed perhaps 3,000 or 4,000 overdoses. We gave away maybe 10,000 fentanyl, 5,000 or 10,000 fentanyl test strips. But Project Dawn, which is the state's naloxone program, is way bigger than us. We're just one of Project Dawn. There's 200 Project Dawn, and last year the state gave out like 250,000 Narcan kits, which is quite amazing, up from perhaps 10,000 4 years ago.
Do you feel like it's working, that the everything would be so much worse, or do you feel like it just puts things off?
It's working, but we've participated in studies of what causes overdose death in Ohio, and 90% is explained by what's in the drug supply. Tell me what's in the drug supply, and I'll tell you how many people will die. So Narcan and Harm Reduction are working on that 10%, which is not insignificant. There's going to be 5,000. There are 5,200 overdose deaths last year. So preventing 500 to 1,000 is significant. But if there's fentanyl in the drug supply and what people take, people are going to die.
I've talked on the program before about how often people who are just coming out of recovery and try drugs again, they've lost their tolerance for it.
That's absolutely it. When you're so vulnerable, is it always scares me when I hear people say that they've been sober for 8 months because one mistake and they're dead. They have no tolerance. And Chelsea was talking about adolescence. Mm-hmm. The first time is the most dangerous time. And in Ohio, before other states is coming in other states, fentanyl is spread to all drugs except marijuana. Only marijuana is safe. 14% of Ohio cocaine has fentanyl in it. 5% of meth has fentanyl in it. Essentially, all opioids have fentanyl in it. So if you're a meth user or a cocaine user, you don't expect it, you don't want it, but every now and then it happens and you're totally vulnerable because you have no tolerance for opioids.
Do you feel like the harm reduction methods, like for instance the test strips, are getting to the people who really need them?
Not on the scale that they need to. Even Narcan is not getting to people who use meth and people who use cocaine. I'm telling people who use cocaine, you know, if someone's on the floor, it's almost certainly an opioid overdose. You should have Narcan with you all the time. But not only our group, the state, and Ohio as a whole has not really made much of an effort because it's hard to expand Narcan's availability in groups beyond opioids.
Why is it hard?
It's hard reaching meth users because they want to have nothing to do with the system. Anytime they touch the system, it turns out bad. They lose their children. They lose their freedom. They lose their job. So they live in the shadows. So this is why NGOs, non-governmental groups such as Harm Reduction, are such a crucial intermediary, because people who use drugs are the people we represent, and they trust us, so we can make the connection. But even local health departments, full of loving, wonderful people, they don't want to walk. They don't want to have anything to do with a local health department.
And then, as far as adolescents go, I was talking with, as you mentioned, Chelsea Shover from UCLA, about reaching them and what works with them. They're a whole different ball of wax, right?
Yeah, and she made good points that you have access to them at school, so that's a good place to reach them. And there's an organization you should have on, Birdie Light, an Equitas Health doctor who lost her son to an overdose. You probably have had her on. And she's trying to bring fentanyl test strips to schools. And that's just a crucial thing to do.
But I can also imagine it's controversial.
Yes, and I'd like to ask her about it, because a mom who lost their child is a hard person to argue with. And her kid, Eli, was only 20, and he was a beautiful kid. and don't even know what drug it was. He was just a Saturday night ready to go out when he died of the overdose. And it's all too common.
Let me ask you, I mean, we're waiting a few weeks now, and I'm going to be talking to Columbus Health Commissioner Dr. Mashika Roberts coming up, but why would they not be able to figure out what killed Eli?
They know that fentanyl killed him.
Okay, but not what the fentanyl was in?
Yeah, but they don't know what drug he intended to take.
Okay.
And that's, Chelsea was alluding it to it. A lot of things are fentanyl only. So you have no idea, did people think it was heroin? Did they think it was cocaine? Did they think it was a pill? And that's the challenge.
How does the politics surrounding this issue impact the work you do at Harm Reduction Ohio?
I'm an optimist, so I would say it doesn't affect us as much as you think, because we try to work with everyone. And even in, like, conservative or people you would think are the state legislature, conservative Republicans, has been supportive of harm reduction and overdose prevention, partly because if you look at the demographics of overdose death, it skews to red counties, and almost every legislature is going to know someone who died. And a legislator told me that he was on the football line next to a close friend who died of an overdose, and it shook him up that, oh, it's not just these people, they're just like us. And you hear that all the time. Oh, it was a sixth grader who died, who came over for a sleepover. So death has been so pervasive, similar to AIDS. In the 80s and 90s, it's brought drug use out of the closet, and we realize drug use are just regular people, and they're calm, and it's not just this stigmatized little class of people.
Colorado has taken steps to make possessing drugs containing fentanyl a felony. How do you view laws like that?
They're counterproductive. Fentanyl exists only because drugs are illegal. The drug war is causing the drug overdose death. In Ohio, we had a small increase in overdose death during the OxyContin era, but when we cracked down on that, it shifted to heroin, and we had a surge. When you crack down on heroin, it shifted to fentanyl. We had another surge. Then there was a carfentanil surge. Then with the pandemic, the supply lines for cocaine and heroin, they got contracted. So the percentage of heroin in our drug supply hit record levels. And like I say, tell me what's in the drug supply. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you how many people died. That's exactly what happened.
Does harm reduction just keep people from dying, or does it help people cut back or maybe even stop using the drugs? Or I guess the idea is to keep them alive so they can make those kinds of moves.
We try to empower them to make, they know what's best for their life. They don't want to die. And as one of our people who since died of an overdose used to say, being a heroin addict is a crummy, she didn't use the word crummy, way to live. People don't want to be a heroin addict. So what we want to do is incrementally let them improve their health and their well-being. For example, needle exchanges, syringe programs, allow people to live without getting hepatitis C and HIV, et cetera. So it's, if you think about like losing weight or anything, it's always incremental improvement. But only in drugs do all or nothing. Oh, just quit or not. But it's not the way human beings work.
Dennis Cushon, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ann.
That's Dennis Cushon. He is president of Harm Reduction Ohio. We'll have a link to that organization on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Coming up, we are going to hear from the health commissioner for the city of Columbus, Dr. Mashika Roberts. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The highly potent synthetic opioid fentanyl has been found in a raft of illegal drugs and associated with the current spike in overdoses. Adolescents have been particularly hard hit, and many are advocating for so-called harm reduction strategies, including needle exchanges and fentanyl test strips, for example. Many city public health departments are employing so-called harm reduction. Dr. Myshika Roberts is health commissioner for the city of Columbus. Her public health career spans 20 years at the local, state, and national levels. Dr. Roberts, welcome back.
Hi, good morning. Happy to see you or be here.
Nice to see you too. Does your agency embrace harm reduction strategies?
Yeah, we do. And we have been focused on harm reduction strategies for almost over 5 years now. We were one of the first, if not the first, in the state of Ohio to start partnering with Equitas and creating SafePoint, which is a needle exchange program. And then we added the fentanyl test strips to that, as well as we've been providing Narcan or naloxone training for a long time here in our community and encouraging those people who use to get trained in Narcan, have it readily available, and not to use alone so that someone could be there to call for help and administer the naloxone.
The recent deaths of the two OSU students has prompted an outpouring of attention for the risks of overdose. But this isn't unusual from where you sit, right?
No, it's not. We have overdoses in our community on a daily basis, unfortunately. And on the day of question where these two students overdosed, we had 17 overdoses that day. So 15 other overdoses that day. Four of which were fatal, 13 were non-fatal. I think what has brought so much attention to this recent case that occurred among our student population at OSU is that these individuals were students. They were not actively seeking a drug like fentanyl, but instead they got it when they were trying to take something like Adderall, which is a prescription drug, which many individuals in our community are prescribed by their provider for ADHD. They were likely taking this so that they could stay awake and alert and prepare for finals. And they got it from someone that was a drug dealer and had laced the drug with fentanyl.
You know, Chelsea Shover of UCLA was talking about how fentanyl's just showing up in everything, that no matter what you're using now, if it's had through illegal sources, in other words, if it's not your friend who got it from the pharmacy, you have to check it.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, when we really started looking into overdoses over 5 years ago, fentanyl was seen in those who were seeking heroin, and it was a more stronger, potent form of heroin. But now, as over time, we've seen fentanyl laced in cocaine and marijuana, and now in these counterfeit prescription drugs. And so we really encourage individuals who are using any type of substance that is not prescribed for them and they did not pick it up from a pharmacy to make sure they test it for fentanyl using fentanyl test strips. And then I think what's most concerning in recent months, we've heard that there are some substances that act like fentanyl, but cannot be detected by the fentanyl test strips. So that is obviously very, very concerning.
Yeah, it just feels like it's shape-shifting all the time, this mm-hmm. crisis.
Mm-hmm. It is. And that's why, you know, we have to get the word out about being cautious, really try to discourage people from using drugs that are not prescribed for them, and making sure that as many in our community are trained with naloxone and have naloxone readily available.
Is there still a stigma associated with all of this that you're still working on overcoming, or has that pretty much disappeared as, you know, the drug use among a lot of people in the community becomes, for lack of a better word, normalized?
Yeah, I personally think there is still a stigma that many people associate those who overdose as addicts. You know, addiction is a disease of the brain. I think the recent case with the students highlights that, you know, these were not addicts. These were someone who just wanted a one-time high or one-time burst of energy, and they unfortunately succumbed to that desire because they got something off the streets that was laced with fentanyl or fentanyl type substance. So we really do still have a stigma in our community, really nationwide, and we've got to get over that because we see the innocence of individuals dying from this. So it's important that we talk to our youth, even as young as middle school, about the dangers of using drugs that are not prescribed for them.
What about having access and access, discreet access, I think is what a lot of people would prefer, discreet access to the test strips, to the naloxone, and that kind of a thing in high schools, in middle schools, in dormitories and whatnot?
Yeah, I definitely think that naloxone should be readily available in a variety of places. Just like we have, you know, CPR and AEDs available, we should also have naloxone available. Having fentanyl test strips in middle schools or high schools, as well as the college level, you know, I think there would be a lot of pushback, particularly in the middle school group. Mm-hmm. But I think if parents really assess what was going on, they would find that they're valuable. I mean, our fentanyl test strips are really innocent. They can be used just like a pregnancy test. You just need to take a little bit of the solution, make sure it has some water to it, not much, and just dip it in. And within 15 to 20 seconds, you'll know if that substance has fentanyl or not. It's really that simple and that fast.
How does it work if you get a pill and you don't know what's in it? How do you use that pill? How do you test a pill?
Sure. So you'd want to crush the pill a little bit, maybe not all of the pill, but most people who are taking it are
inhaling it.
Sometimes they're swallowing it, but sometimes they're inhaling it. You want to crush it a little bit. Just put a little bit of water so that it's got some moistness to it, and then take the test strip and just simply put the edge on the substance, and you know, quickly you'll see if you get two lines, you know it's negative. One line is positive, and so you'll quickly have that answer. It's not something you have to wait for. You'll get that information really quick.
My previous guest, Dennis Cushon, president of Harm Reduction Ohio, you know, we were talking about kind of those hard to reach groups and how to overcome that. And he said particularly methamphetamine users are very wary of government and government controls and avoid them. Do you find that that's the case as well, that's a group that's tougher to get to?
They can be. I would say that, you know, that's why we try to partner with non-governmental agencies like Equitas and SafePoint, like Waterbeds and stuff, to get these products out there. We partner with a lot of community-based organizations to do the naloxone or Narcan training. But we will take any avenue we can to reach the population. There's going to be some in our community who are actively using or resistant to harm reduction, but we keep gnawing at them. We keep trying to see if we can make headway to them because they need this just as much as everybody else.
We were talking earlier about the new nonprofit that will decide how to spend the $880 million, almost $1 billion of Ohio's opioid settlement money. What are your thoughts about the approach to that? And is harm reduction, are you confident that harm reduction is going to be a big enough part of that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we have been talking, and our county administrators are going to, are taking the lead on that for Franklin County. And so we've been giving some ideas of where we think the funds should be used. Franklin County, as much as it sounds like, you know, we, we'll get a lot of money. That money will go pretty quickly, and it is spread out over many, many years. But harm reduction, as well as treatment availability, have to be core to our community to help solve some of the issues we have with drug use in our community.
I mean, maybe I'm jaded, but $1 billion doesn't sound like a lot of money to me anymore.
No, it doesn't. And that's why I said, and it's spread out over many, many years. So it's not like we're going to get a billion all at once. And so we have to think about how we're going to use that in our community to get the most bang for the buck.
What if somebody gave you what you want to spend right now? What would you want to spend it on?
Well, I mean, I think we are really pleased with what we're seeing that Adam H. of Franklin County is doing with this one-stop shop for behavioral health. So that's one. We need to have treatment available 24 hours a day. And when I say treatment available, I mean the door needs to be open for treatment 24 hours a day. And then obviously from a harm reduction model, we need to flood our community with naloxone as well as fentanyl test strips to normalize that and make them readily available.
Yeah, treatment is a really big problem. It's not something you turn on a dime. Is there any particular, I mean, is it just an overall shortage, or are there problems within the treatment community that you'd like to address?
I think the issues that we see from a public health standpoint with treatment access is treatment is available, but is it available at 11 p.m. in the evening when someone has overdosed again, survives, and is ready to go to treatment? And so that's what I mean by 24/7. A lot of our treatment facilities stop their intake at 4 p.m. Well, many overdoses happen after 4 p.m. and you've got to capture that individual when they're ready. And if they're ready at 11 p.m. to get treatment, you need to get them into treatment at that time, because waiting until the next morning, you could potentially lose them as they go through withdrawals, they want to use again. And we've lost that opportunity.
You know, a lot of the treatment options at first are very short term. Another issue, you just get through withdrawal and then you're out again.
Yeah. So it's important that we provide individuals with the right support from the community to support them through this and make sure that the treatment continues and find the treatment that's best for them. Some people need inpatient. Some people can do outpatient. Also, the individual should be removed from their environment. You know, going back to the same house where others are using, if they're trying to get clean, that's not going to help them. So we need to be able to provide that wraparound service and support for whatever that individual might need.
Dr. Roberts, my last guest, Dennis Cushon, president of Harm Reduction Ohio, said that it's pretty rare that fentanyl in marijuana, fentanyl in Adderall, fentanyl in marijuana isn't a thing. Fentanyl in Adderall is way overblown. It's probably not much of a thing. I mean, where do people go? Where do you go for the best, the most up-to-date and authoritative information about what's going on with this spread of fentanyl?
So we look to our law enforcement to tell us what they're finding when they do large seizures. We look to the drug screenings that happen in our emergency rooms and our hospitals to share this information with us. So we're getting the data that way. And then obviously our coroner, when they do autopsies, they can tell us some things, and then piecing that together with how the patient presented and what they were using. We do have what we call a DODI, drug overdose death investigation here in Franklin County that is currently led by our coroner, our Franklin County coroner, and Franklin County Public Health. So we get a lot of good information that way as well. So it's not just hearsay. We have some valid reasons to believe that fentanyl is being laced with marijuana in our community, as well as counterfeit prescription drugs like Adderall.
Dr. Maishika Roberts, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate the topic.
Dr. Maishika Roberts is Health Commissioner for Columbus Public Health. Her public health career spans 20 years at the local, state, and national levels. That's it for now. Thank you so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.